I'm going to come down here because it's summer and I get bored. And Kent keeps bugging us to be in the round. So Kent, here we are. Are you happy?
I am.
Okay. Kent's smiling. For those of you who aren't, blame Kent. We're in the middle of two series right now because, you know, one series just isn't enough. So we're in the middle of John, which is just kind of the narrative of John as John writes about Jesus and the life of Jesus. And then we also started last week this series on what Jesus doesn't talk about in John or in the Gospels. And we'll be doing that one on the first Sunday of the month for the summer. Although next month it'll be the second Sunday. Anyway, you don't need to try to keep track of it. It'll be fun. There's some hot topics in that series because Jesus actually doesn't talk about a lot of hot topics that are hot today. And that means something, and we'll have fun talking about it. But today we're back into the narrative of John, which means John chapter 5, the last chunk of it. So you can turn there on your device, whatever you want to do. Before you do, I want you to think about a word: vulnerability. Vulnerability. Just think on that word for a minute. You don't need to answer these out loud, but what is it? Do you have it? Do you like it? Do you need it? Do you want it? Is it necessary for life? Keep some of those questions in your head on the periphery of your mind. We'll come back to them. Vulnerability. Vulnerability. All right, John chapter 5. It's a big section. When I first looked at it, I said this is way too large of a section. But kind of broke it up into some areas that work for me. Hopefully they work for you. Jesus is talking to the Pharisees after the healing of the invalid and then after what Aaron talked about a couple weeks ago, the voice of God. He's continuing to talk to them, and he talks about kind of five main chunks here. The first one, actually it's the last one, I'm going to talk about it first, Moses. Everyone knows of Moses, right? We've all heard the story. He's probably the most famous person in the Bible besides Jesus. Definitely the most known throughout the Old Testament. And we know the story of Moses pretty well. Israel is in Egypt. They're captured, they're enslaved, they're in need of rescue, and they cry out to God. God, we need help. And this little baby is born, and the mom has this idea to put the baby in the little thing you did in Sunday school, float down the river. The baby's found by Pharaoh's daughter. Moses' sister goes and says, "Hey, I know you just happened to find a baby here." And the Pharaoh's daughter says, "Oh, well, who would possibly nurse this baby?" And Moses' sister says, "Oh, well, I know a lady who could actually do it." Hint, hint. And it's Moses' mom. So they work out this perfect little system where Moses is raised as an Egyptian, but his mom continues to get to nurse him and raise him. But for the first 40 years of his life, Moses is raised as an Egyptian. That is his life. But he does realize his true identity at some point, that he is a Hebrew. And in those first 40 years of his life, towards the end of it, he sees an Egyptian treating a Hebrew poorly, and he ends up killing the Egyptian. This is not a good thing. So Moses flees out into the desert. And for the second 40 years of his life, he basically settles down, has a family, white picket fence, things are going well. Then God comes along with the famous burning bush. "Moses, you're going to go and free my people." Moses, "No, I don't want to." Moses ends up doing it. You know that story well. It's been a movie. It's been all over the place. We have the 10 plagues. We have talking to Pharaoh. We have the parting of the Red Sea. But the Hebrew people are freed eventually, right? And they get to Mount Sinai, and Moses is the one who goes up onto the mountain and gets the 10 commandments and gets this mission and purpose for his people from God. And it's frankly this amazing story. And when you look through all the Jewish celebrations, including Passover, there's this word constantly: remember, 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 remember this story, because Moses is the hero. Moses is the man. And if you look at this story, even just from a metaphoric perspective, it's beautiful. A captured, enslaved, free, captured, enslaved, prisoned people find their true identity, freed by God. But not free to just sit around and celebrate their freedom. They're freed with a mission and a purpose to affect the world. And it's a beautiful story. But the story goes on. Israel gets a little bit of power. Israel gets a little more power. And eventually, Israel is doing to others what was done to them. The exact same thing. They are enslaving people. So the prophets come along. Remember, guys, God doesn't like this. It's pretty cool now that you're on this end of it. When you were on this end, you were complaining. Let's not do this. Israel doesn't listen. The Babylonians come along, capture Israel, and they end up back enslaved, imprisoned, captured again. But Israel cries out again, God, help us, please. And the story goes on. Babylon is conquered by the Persians. The Jews are allowed to leave and rebuild the temple. And then there's a series more of conquerings, revolutions, revolts, and we come to the time of Jesus, where there's three basic power groups, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes. They're the social power groups running the show, but really, Israel is again captured, enslaved. Now, it's not as obvious, and they're not complaining as much, but they're basically captured, enslaved, and waiting for freedom again from the Romans. And this is why we've been talking about in John all of these prophecies. John the Baptist coming, this is the one coming. When we talked about the conversion of Nathanael, he said, this is the one Moses talked about. Because Moses said this, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your fellow Israelites, you must listen to him. And so, everyone is saying, Jesus is the new Moses. Jesus is the one coming to free us again. All right? So we have that. That's a pretty big thing. When I say Moses, it means a lot. A captured, enslaved people who said to God, please help us. God comes and rescues them and frees them for a purpose to go and affect the world. Okay, Moses, there's that one. Now there's another one. And it's a big section. It's the start of this section, and it starts in verse 31. And when I first read this, I read it and just, I have no idea what this means, so I'll read it to you. Jesus talking, if I testify about myself, my testimony is not true. There is another who testifies in my favor, and I know that his testimony about me is true. You have sent to John, and he has testified to the truth. Not that I accept human testimony, but I mention it that you may be saved. John was a lamp that burned and gave light, and you chose for a time to enjoy his light. I have testimony weightier than that of John. For the works that the Father has given me to finish, the very works that I am doing, testify that the Father has sent me. And the Father who sent me has himself testified concerning me. Got it? Now, I read it and I saw a lot of one word. Testimony and testify. It's all over the place. Testimony and testify. Testimony and testify. I mean, testimony. All right, what does this mean? So I did the most obvious thing. I called John Cooney over here. Soon to be Superior County Judge, correct? Yeah, he's embarrassed. He doesn't want to admit it. This is a judge in our church who's currently a county judge, and he is going to be a Superior Court Judge because no one's running against him. He just found out on Friday. So these are the guys that when you're looking on the ballot, you know, you never check them because you're like, I don't know who these judges are, or at least that's how I do it. I do now know one of them, and I will check his name. But I met with John, and I said, okay, John, testimony, testify. I mean, this is your job. This is all you hear. Oh, what? Can you help me with anything here? And we want to be careful to not to take too much of Western court language and put it into this Hebrew, Middle Eastern context. I get that. But at the same time, if you look at courts around the world, although they are a ton of variety and doing things many different ways, they basically come down to what? Some party hoping that this other party can make a decision, right? That's what this party can't make a decision, so they need this third party, a judge of some kind, to make a decision, usually concerning two other parties. And so it's built around testimony, which is basically the presenting of evidence. So you're trying to get this third party to listen. Well, here's my evidence, blah, blah, blah. And Jesus starts to go into this, and he starts with saying, I'm not going to present evidence about myself. which John said is usually the worst kind of evidence, because we all know that we think we're pretty cool, and we all know that we think we're a lot cooler than we actually are. And so when we go talk to a judge, we're going to make sure that the judge knows how cool we are. And John says, thank you, I know that you think you're cool, I would rather hear some other evidence. So Jesus says, I'm not going to present evidence about myself, you're not even going to accept it. But there's been other evidence, right? From John the Baptist. And this is a great kind of testimony, a great kind of evidence. Someone else who knows you and speaks to you about you and says, this is the evidence this man says who he says he is. This man is who he says he is. And Jesus says, you accepted this evidence for a while, and then you kind of faded away. But there was weightier evidence. And again, there's all kinds of evidence. There's weightier. This is going to matter more. And what is this final evidence? God himself has testified about me. God himself has presented evidence as to who I am. So we have this incredible little speech here on evidence. And Jesus says, there is all kinds of testimony and people testifying about me and who I am. God himself has testified. And then he adds another one. The works I am doing are even more evidence of who I say I am. So these are the signs, right? We have talked about signs. A few weeks ago, we talked about the invalid being healed. And this whole speech from Jesus to the Pharisees is in response to this man being healed. And the Pharisees saying, we don't like that. And we're only in John chapter 5. We've already seen all kinds of miracles and signs and wonders. Water into wine, centurion's son, the invalid. So we have Moses. We have testimony. We have signs. Three pretty big words, but it keeps going. Verse 44. Do you not accept the glory that comes from the only God? Glory. Now, this is a strange word. We don't use this often. I like to equate it to this. Has anyone ever done a little thing where you all sit at the dinner table and you say, we're going to go around the table and say something nice about Johnny today? So, Johnny's brother, Johnny's sister, Johnny's mom, you're all going to say something nice about Johnny, right? Anyone done that? Okay? This is the idea of glory. Honor, recognition, intentionally saying, this is what we appreciate about you. And it's a beautiful thing to do. We did it for a year in our extended family. Whoever's birthday it was, all of the extended family would go around and say something nice about that person. It's incredibly awkward and embarrassing at times, but it's also beautiful, usually tears. This is glory. So imagine sitting at the table, and God's there. Allie, this is what I appreciate about you. I love when you da-da-da. This is the glory from God. Pretty cool now. I wouldn't mind it. So we have Moses. We have testimony. We have signs. We have glory from God. And Jesus adds another. Verse 39, we talked about this last week, life. You study the scriptures diligently because you think that in them that you have eternal life. These are the very scriptures that testify about me, yet you refuse to come to me to have life. Two words for life in the Greek, bios and zoe. One is being alive. One is living. We have the statement, everyone is alive, some of us are living. We know what that means. This is Jesus saying, this living, this life, the one that you're all after, I have it. We talked about, we look through it in the scriptures, but Jesus says, it's right here, it's with me, life. So, we have Moses, an imprisoned people being freed, people looking for liberation again. We have testimony, we have signs, we have glory. We have life. This is five pretty amazing words that Jesus says, this is me. And yet, if you read the passage, you'll notice these. You do not believe, you refuse, you do not accept. Now, this is the part where we usually lay into the Pharisees, because they're idiots, and boy, are they stupid. But this is what I want to do this morning. Why? How? What is it with the Pharisees? We've talked about them all last fall. I still don't know that I know what it is with them. But we have Moses. We have testimony. We have signs. We have glory. We have life. And none of them matter to the Pharisees. They just don't care about any of these pretty amazing things that any of us would want. And it's very easy to look at people, oh boy, they're so dumb. They just don't get it. And what I want to look at is, do I get it? Because we've talked about, we are the Pharisees. I mean, this is us. So what is their problem? What is my problem, maybe? I mean, what would cause me to ignore, to refuse all of these things? And we've come up with a lot of answers, and we've talked about them. One, their religion. They're very stuck in a boxed-in religion. Rules, regulations, laws, this is the way everything works. If anything is outside of this, we do not like it, and we reject it. And we can do the very same thing. Our laws, our rules, our regulations, our doctrines can actually prevent us from seeing Jesus. We've talked about it. We have that same tendency. What else? Well, their power. We mentioned it a little bit. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes were in control. They had the power. And Jesus is coming and saying, maybe you don't have the power. And of course, none of us like this, and we all have this very same tendency. We want to cling to our power. And so it doesn't matter if there's Moses and glory and testimony and signs and life. You're threatening my power. We have this same tendency. Maybe they were just disappointed in Jesus. We've talked about this, right? They were looking for the king to come in on the horse and throttle the Romans. And they're a little bit disappointed that Jesus actually didn't do it that way. Maybe we have that same tendency, to be disappointed. Maybe it was their loss. I mean, they had a lot to lose. Maybe more than anyone. Jesus was saying, lose your life for me. Lose your power. Lose your authority. And maybe it was their upbringing. We've got to take this one into account, right? How many of us, if raised as a Pharisee, would be a Pharisee? Oh, those idiot Pharisees. Wow. I don't know. We'd probably all be the same way. So you look at this and you go, okay, those are all valid, but what is it? I want to go back to the word vulnerability. Vulnerability. Brené Brown, I've talked about her before. She's becoming one of my favorite people and thinkers on the planet. I talked about one of her TED Talks a few months ago. She just released another one pretty recently. Brené talks a lot about vulnerability. And as I was watching it, I thought, man, if you get down to the thing behind the thing behind the thing behind the thing with these Pharisees, vulnerability. They don't want to be vulnerable. And I don't want to be vulnerable. We don't want to be vulnerable. We don't like vulnerability, generally. I don't know what you thought when I showed the word, but you probably went, oh, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of reasons we don't like it. It's weakness. If I'm vulnerable, I need you. I can't handle it myself. And we don't like to be weak, especially as men. I mean, it's the big joke. The man won't ask for directions. Wouldn't even want to be that weak. I've got this. We do not like to express weakness as a culture. It's admitting you might be wrong. In order for any change to take place ever, you have to admit that where you are might need something different, right? And to admit that where you are might need something different means to admit that where you are might be wrong. Well, we do not like to admit we are wrong. And as a result, we may not like to change. It's potentially hurt. To be vulnerable, whew, you open yourself up. Here I am. You can hurt me. Generally, we say this about creative types. I mean, to do a painting, to write a book, to give a sermon, honestly, pretty vulnerable. Here I am. I didn't really like that, Ryan. Oh, thanks. Hurts. It hurts to be vulnerable. And when it hurts enough, we say, "Huh, I promise you, I will never let that happen again. I will never be hurt in that way again." It's potentially failure. And this is another one. We don't like to fail. I love that one of our words here at Branches is risk. Risk means you might fail. That's the risk. It might not work. That's vulnerable. Yeah, here I am. It might hurt. It might not work. I might be a failure. Brené made this statement about TED Talks. I don't know how many of you love TED Talks. I do. She said, you know, if you look at TED Talks, you look at TED, basically it's a bunch of people admitting their failures. That's what it is. And people are viewing these talks over and over and over again. And I thought, man, would anyone say that about the church? That's just a bunch of people admitting their failures. Not generally. It's admitting that we don't know everything. Christians are generally known for knowing everything. This is admitting, now, we don't know everything. I'm going to be vulnerable here. I don't know. So you go through this list. I mean, weakness, hurt, admitting I don't know everything, potential failure. This is not a good list. This is not a list I go running toward. This is a list of a lot of things to be afraid of, a lot of things to fear, and a lot of reasons to not be vulnerable. So why would we even want it? Well, according to Brené Brown, who's done years of research, she says this: vulnerability is the birthplace of creativity, innovation, and change. But I would say, Jesus would add, vulnerability is the birthplace of this life I'm talking about. The kingdom of God, it's about being vulnerable. Let's look back for a minute. Moses, this story of a people enslaved who are freed. If you're never vulnerable enough to admit you're enslaved, you'll probably never be rescued. And this is where the Pharisees were. Well, we're kind of enslaved, but honestly, we're kind of in control right now. I don't know that we need this, God. I don't even know if I like this Jesus coming in. I don't know that we need Moses anymore. I don't know if we need a new Moses. And Jesus says at the end of that, Moses is your accuser, not me, which is interesting. I don't know if we need it. Can you ever be rescued without being vulnerable? How about testimony and evidence? If you already know everything, then what further evidence do you need? I mean, we see this very well in our culture and politics, right? Oh, man. Doesn't matter the news story. I'm a Republican. Oh, yeah, I know why the budget, I already have the answers. Well, new evidence? No, I already heard from so-and-so. I'm a Democrat. Oh, yeah, I don't care about that budget stuff because I already know the and I heard from this guy and Yeah, thanks, but no thanks. And we do this constantly. You'll listen to talk radio. I love to do this. Just change the channels. Progressive, conservative. Progressive, conservative. They're usually talking about the exact same story, but they both already know everything about the story. I don't need that. I don't need any more evidence. Thanks, but no thanks. I already know. No need to be vulnerable. What about signs and wonders even? I mean, these are the miracles. These are the things we always say, oh, if Jesus was just here performing signs and wonders today, we would all, no, we wouldn't. No, we wouldn't. In fact, the signs and wonders only got the Pharisees mad. You just healed an invalid on the Sabbath. How could you? But let's be honest. If you're in need of healing, pretty vulnerable to say, hey, Jesus, heal my son. Because what if Jesus doesn't? Wow, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt. So maybe I'll just ignore those signs and wonders. What about glory? I'm so proud of you. If you've ever done this thing around the table, it's really hard. It's really hard to even be the person when everyone's saying stuff to you. Generally, kids are really good at it. They don't care. Like, oh, mommy, I just love you. You're so great. And da da da. Are you talking about Anna? Oh, she's just beaming. Everyone else is kind of, thanks. Like a child enter the kingdom of heaven. Children don't really have a problem being vulnerable. But even for you to speak glory about me, well, that means life, real living. All we try to do is remove vulnerability from life. And life requires it. What does all this lead to? Think verse 42. Jesus says to the Pharisees, I know you. I know that you do not have the love of God in your hearts. How many people would say you can love someone without being vulnerable? Oh, we all know that one, don't we? Oh, that's why love hurts. That's why we sing songs about it. Oh, man, does love hurt when that person stabs you in the heart? And so we have a culture, we're actually pretty good at trying to come up with some ways to love without being vulnerable. Because I'd rather have all the love part, but I don't need this vulnerable part. This vulnerable stuff, there's too much to be afraid of. There's way too much fear over here. Anthony DeMello is a Jesuit priest, and he did say, there's two things in the world, love and fear. That's it. It's kind of one of those statements you go, wait, what? Oh, kind of like that. I don't know. I'm not sure. Is it really? Everything boils down to love and fear. I don't know if you agree 100%. I don't know if I do. But this little passage seems to be saying something close to that. Pharisees, you're so afraid. You're so afraid of everything. You're afraid your religion might get upset. You're afraid your power might get upset. You're afraid you might be wrong. You're afraid you don't know everything. You're afraid you might need help. You might have to call out. You're afraid you might be disappointed. You're afraid, you're afraid, you're afraid, and you don't have the love of God in your hearts. Because they can't exist together. And so, yeah, you've got Moses, you've got testimony, you've got signs, you've got glory, you've got life. These five amazing words that are loaded with meaning that are ready to come into your life today, but you're too afraid. And you don't have the love of God in your hearts. Perfect love casts out fear. It's well known today the church is failing. Stat after stat, research after research. It's kind of almost gotten to the point I'm bored with another article. Oh, yeah, I know. The church is failing. Came across this quote the other day in response to another article about how the church is failing. The once near universal brand of American Christianity is being associated with an ever-shrinking size of the American public. Like Burger King and Axe body spray, you may wake up one day and find that the overwhelming majority of the public has simply tuned out everything you have to say. Now, it's always possible that the leaders of the major American churches may want it this way. But for those who don't, the window of opportunity where people might be willing to consider a more relevant form of modern Christianity is closing. Now, even in that paragraph, I know there's some words in there that strike fear in some of you. Modern, relevant form of Christianity? Wait a second. That's okay. This is my concern. I agree. The door is closing. People are going to look at TED Talks and not church. Frankly, sometimes I'd rather go look at a TED Talk. There's something missing in the church. Vulnerability. Man. And my fear is the door is closing. Because the world wants this love. The world doesn't need any more fear. We all have enough of it. In fact, we're so frightened of it that we often miss out on Moses, this liberator, on testimony after testimony after testimony, on signs, on glory. Ryan, I'm proud of you. On life. The Pharisees' religion closed out. It was done. Now we would argue, well, that was a good thing. It should have been. Yeah. What about ours? Why is it closing? My prayer is we're not the Pharisees. My prayer is we're not afraid of being vulnerable and that we bask in this love of God that is in our hearts. And Jesus could say that about us. And that we are in with Moses, with testimony, with signs, with glory and life. Would you bow your heads? I'm not going to pray this morning. I want you to pray. I want you to just listen to God. Maybe there's some things you need to be vulnerable about and confess. Maybe there's some things you need to ask help for and acknowledge it might not work. Maybe there's some things that people have asked you for help for and you need to help. Maybe some of you are so soaked in vulnerability right now that you don't want another talk on vulnerability and you don't even want to hear it. Maybe you just need to hear it's okay. Maybe it's a good place to be. Take a second. We love you, God. May we be a people known for having the love of God in our hearts. Amen. Have a great week. Go in grace and peace.